true or false. Richard Tice this week scuppered his own solar wind farm plans in his constituency. True or false? And it's over to you first, Gemma.
True.
You think it was true? Liz?
True.
And what's the reason for that?
I can't remember the story now. I can't remember the detail. But yes, I know it's true because I've read it.
Because he's a beep.
Because he's a hypocrite.
He's a f***ing idiot.
Because, yeah, they're promoting net zero, anti-net zero.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically, that's it. That's their manifesto.
He came out on Twitter and said, and he's deleted the tweet, I couldn't find it, that they're going to ban all applications for solar panels, batteries and wind farms. And then an ex-councillor had to come on and explain to him, you can't do that. And by doing that, you've now lost every court case you might try and challenge these people on. Which is just like, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Okay, yeah. One each. A Tory Today pointed out that Brexit had damaged immigration returns. So it actually had done the exact opposite. Liz?
Yes, true.
Gemma?
True, and I know who it is as well. Chris Philp, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Caught on camera or whatever it was. It was leaked. Was it leaked? But they played it on Sky News.
It was leaked.
I'd love to know who leaked it.
No, you never will. But it was absolutely amazing to see that.
Yeah, because we're not part of the Dublin Agreement.
Yeah, considering Boris just gone on about it. Yeah, because we're out of the... So if you... I think it was 40% of refugees, if they'd actually applied in different countries, has been rejected. But because we're out of that, they now can't be returned. So,
cool. Wow. Cool. Wow. Brilliant. Well done.
Number three. Well done. Richard Tice owns a company that produces solar panels. True or false, Gemma?
I'm going to go false because I don't know the answer. And I'm assuming that if he was able to profit out of something, he would be for it.
Liz?
I'm going to go false as well because I'm sure that would have come out already. Surely, to goodness.
It is true. He is a fucking idiot. I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. Some of the stupidest people on the planet.
What, has shares in or owns?
I believe he has a substantial share within the company. That is my understanding.
Unreal.
I will fact check myself. You can't believe it, can you?
No. Really weird.
Your shares have sloppy on journalists, Simon.
Final thing. And this is to Liz. Labour intend to bring in an AI to screen benefit claimants.
Oh, yeah, probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
Gemma?
I wouldn't be surprised either.
It is true. They're bringing a plan out this year. We're going to have computers doing the jobs of people down in the claims centres. Joy.
Yeah. Yes, interesting. I'm sure nothing could possibly go wrong.
Okay, let's get
especially after
it.
The post office. Yeah.
Yeah, because that worked out so well. Welcome everyone back to the Sunday Roast, and we have an excellent guest on with us. You're a regular now. Gemma, please can you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Gemma Forte, and I am one half of the Trawl podcast and a gobby person on shows like Jeremy Vine and Sky News and so on.
You do a great job, you really do.
I do my best.
How many seasons are you now into the Trawl?
We don't really have seasons. It's just relentless. I think we've only taken 1 week off in about 3.5 years. I mean, it's absolutely exhausting. But also, we were told, like, we're with Global now, and they were like, no, podcasts, you just keep going. I was like, oh, what, forever? And sort of, yes. So we take our mics on holiday and stuff. I am about to ask about that. Be maybe good to have 1 week over the summer just to sort of rinse our brains. But we're also obsessed with it. We love it. You know, Marina and I. It's Marina Perkis, who I do the podcast with. And so, it is a joy. And it is the definition of a passion project.
We got plenty to talk about this week. I was starting to think this is a quiet week. It's not.
It's never a quiet week. Don't be so ridiculous.
Liz.
I'll take my glasses off. I don't need them.
Liz, can you please introduce yourself, my lovely co-host?
Liz Webster, and rabid Remainer and founder of Save British Farming, who's always looking out for our food supplies.
Which we're going to need more and more. It hasn't rained, has it, for like
three months? Getting scary.
No one's talking about it.
Well, I was on LBC with Andrew Marr last night, so I did talk about it to him. But it's always astonishing how little people meet, journalists understand about farming. It's kind of like he wanted to talk about which crops were getting the worst of the drought. It's kind of like, well, nothing's growing, Andrew. And then it's not only about things growing, because we grow things not just to feed people, but we also have to feed animals. And we grow stuff to feed animals in the winter who are housed in the winter. So if it to have such a drought so early in the season is seriously concerning after a really, really wet winter and autumn, so that we haven't had any autumn drilling either. So there's major problems with food coming.
Is that the reason why Mark got you on the show?
We did a panel a couple of weeks ago. You came
I don't. I
about
know.
food security, and so yes, a few programs have come out from that because we're getting trying to get people to think about these things, because people take food for granted. They think it just, suddenly magically comes from a supermarket, but with war becoming more likely, as we warned before Brexit, and with climate change absolutely doing what we warned it would do, it means that we really have had a decade of negligence, at least, in terms of really going Britain on our own. It should have precipitated a real drive into producing food so that we're self-sufficient, but we did the opposite because they were gearing up to the American trade deal, which was always very, very bad thinking. It's not to say that, even in history, America has droughts and floods. Everywhere in the world has droughts and floods. So we should be producing food in this country on productive land, and we should be modernizing to, limit the amount of water. And there's all sorts of things that you can do, but we haven't invested in it because Michael Gove came up with agriculture policy, which doesn't even hardly mention food. And the Labour government are continuing with it. It's all about, oh, let's get them distracted with environmental stuff, because we're going to offshore all our emissions and import all this food from America. And that's where we are. And we're still there. And we've still got lots of lies going on.
It's interesting because we've just had this week with Starmer and that oh so wonderful speech that he did, Gemma, because he obviously didn't mention anything about farming within that.
No.
What did you make of it? Because I mean, it doesn't seem think that's one of the issues I think need tackling is something to someone needs to be talking about the issues that are taking place with farming and especially with this drought that's taking place. And that
Look,
speech
yeah,
just go on, Gemma.
the country is being just essentially there's one topic, and it's immigration, and that has been led by Farage, right? And I understand why there are major concerns in towns around the UK where there are immigrants all housed crammed together in these hotels at a huge expense. I can understand that that must be unsettling. I can understand that if your own life isn't going that well and you're like, oh God, that's such a strain on our resources. Some of that is true as well. But the fact that everybody is looking that way is an absolute travesty. And also the fact that Starmer is not using a much more intelligent inflection about it all, and also understanding that you can't conflate that, all of immigration with those two issues, i.e. migrants being housed in hotels at great cost and the boats. I think if you speak to any sensible person, they would say, yes, there needs to be safe passage for people who come in the boats because it's bloody dangerous. And yes, those people who are like languishing in these hotels need to be processed and need to be sort of ascertain who's here and all of those things. All of that is entirely reasonable. But the way that he made that speech, I found profoundly bloody depressing, because they are so obsessed with getting that number down, which, yeah, it's huge, 1 million, right? But hundreds of thousands of that is students. This idea that that's all of those people is an absolute load of bollocks. And the fact that we've got 130,000 vacancies in the care industry, and we only had 10,000 visas or something last year, I mean, what is he doing? Why isn't he explaining that to people and saying, we're not stopping carers coming over? And also, we need to sort it out so that our own doctors and nurses are happier so they don't all go to Australia. So, in the meantime, like, we have to plug that gap when, as you're an aging population and we need people to look after you, and those at the moment, there aren't even any care courses available to to teach people here how to do it. Plus, people here don't want to do it. Plus, it's so badly paid because all of the fat cats are fleecing. Right. So all of that. So, yes, it's exhausting. It's boring. It's tiring and it's depressing. And I agree. There are so many more things to be thinking about as well, i.e. the quality of life for everybody. And as Liz has just explained, what we eat, you know, what's happening with our schools and with our young people and all of that. So it's dire. And I can't forgive Starmer for that speech, because a lot of people who really hope Labour would be better and would present real change really came at me for criticising him for it. Yeah.
Like people you know or people on...
No, online. Online.
Yeah.
Online. You know, which is fine. It's par for the course. You write anything and you get a load of shite. And actually, also it got absolutely amplified what I wrote, which was essentially, well done, Labour. You know, you've got people who really thought you represented great change. And now I use the word despise, it's probably a bit strong, but I was feeling really angry. And then I said, and then you've got people probably like me who were just like, really hope that, you know, and we're going to see how it goes. And you're just like really turned off. And then you've got people who are going to vote reform anyway, and they're still not going to vote for you. So what are you doing?
And he's weaponizing immigration, and it's dangerous.
Exactly. And
to be honest, a lot of those people that they say are coming in boats are not coming in boats. They're coming in the back of lorries, probably, because there is no border control. Why would you go on a boat if you can get in the back of a truck? We've got loads of illegal food coming in. I know lots of people who live in Dover. If the numbers were arriving that they say are arriving, honestly, there would be footage of A, busloads of people being bussed out of Dover. B, there would be loads and loads of boats in Dover. There are some, but there's not anywhere near the number they're saying. That's the first lie. Secondly, the other thing they don't talk about is the fact the guy who's benefiting from them going in hotels is now a billionaire. You know, you just couldn't make it up. And yes, they're not talking about the fact that we need immigration. They're not talking about the fact that when I was in hospital on Monday, that all of the staff in our hospitals that we rely on are, you know, I mean, most of us are descendants of immigrants anyway, but goodness knows how they're feeling. I mean, a lot of them were on James O'Brien yesterday saying, well, actually, I'm going to go. And so really, emigration is more of a problem, a brain drain, than immigration, in my view. And the other real thing that's not spoken about is the fact that Vladimir Putin is amassing troops on the border with Finland.
Yeah.
And we are looking at repeating history. You know, as soon as he goes into Finland, which I'm sure he's looking likely to do, then we're at war. And that brings me back to food again. You know, all of these things that I see, I don't, you know, I'm not triggered by migrants coming here. We need them. In fact, you know,
can I be clear, Liz? Me too. I'm not. But I also think it's fair when people who say to me, yeah, but you're in a bit of a bubble. I am. I live in quite a nice middle class sort of area. I don't have the hotel. I'm just trying to say that I think as a commentator, it is important to not make perhaps some of the mistakes that we made during the Brexit campaign, which is to assume that, like, you are ridiculous for thinking. I mean, even now you're frowning, right? I have learned a little bit from that. There are some people, of course, a strand of people who are just racist. Of course there are. But there are people who feel fed up when their concerns are not listened to. And they're not people who live in areas like me. They're people who are living right on the doorstep of the hotels. And I think you can't dismiss their genuine concerns. But I also, of course, know that what happens is, as a repercussion, is all the Filipinos, the Pakistani people. I picked my friend up from hospital the other day. She'd had excellent care. And yeah, they were all like foreign, you know, brilliant, wonderful, caring medics. Yeah, yeah. Of course.
The truth of the matter is, though, Gemma, is that by putting them in hotels to help their billionaire donors, it's actually served as a great hypnotic tool to get people all scared of immigration, because that's what they want. It's a massive distraction to the fact that they're really, really, really making fundamental changes. The biggest risk to everybody, and I'll say it to you a million times over, the biggest danger to all of us is the fact we've got illegal food flooding in here. That means you could go into a takeaway, eat a kebab, and the bloody thing could kill you.
Where's
that
the
is
food
a bigger
coming
risk
from?
To you
Where's
than it? An immigration.
Of course, where's it coming from?
It's coming from the EU, but it's food that they wouldn't be able to
Not,
sell?
no, Al,
Not,
it's not
is it not?
necessarily. It's not necessarily from
Okay, go on.
England. Everything, more or less, that arrives in this country, the majority of the food that comes into this country comes via Rotterdam. If it comes from India, it's sent to Rotterdam. And we left the internal organs, which filtered out the quality of food, which we were in, which meant we didn't need to have any border checks. And then we've implemented border checks, which are as useful as a chocolate teapot. They are absolutely pathetic. And I've got people going on to me, I'm worried about immigration. Well, I'm really, really worried about this because, A, there's a risk of disease, there's a risk of dying from food poisoning. And yes, it would stop the migrants coming in. And if they really wanted to stop the migrants coming in, they should open up options for them to apply in embassies in other countries across the world. Well, we've got an embassies in every bloody country. So it is actually being used as a massive bell to hypnotize a huge swathe of the electorate. And this week, Keir Starmer proved, and with his reply yesterday in the House of Commons,
Oh,
that
yeah.
he is up for the game. And
Yeah.
he gave in a reply yesterday that John Redwood would have given,
Yeah.
and he, he's done, done, absolutely done. He needs to go, and that's where my fight is, because the Labour Party needs to get on, because if they don't replace him, we seriously have got the reality of
Well,
probably
yeah.
Nigel Farage winning.
Yeah, he's literally rolling out the red carpet for them by pandering to what he thinks is their base rather than having any kind of vision, and also neglecting like the swathes of people who voted Green, Lib Dem, Labour. Like, oh. And actually, I thought there was a fabulous clip which we put in our podcast this week, Kevin Maguire on GMB. And he was just so fed up, Labour man through and through, and talking about how, the by-election, which they lost by 6 votes, where the turnout wasn't fantastic. They lost by 6 votes. And he said every single doorstep that the Labour people were speaking to, they didn't care about migration. It didn't come up. They cared about the loss of PIP, the disability cuts, and the winter fuel allowance.
It's the betrayal. It's the same as Nick Clegg and the tuition fees. It's
Yeah.
betrayal.
It is. It is. And I mean, also Starmer, you just think, so we, you hear him back in the day saying one thing. Nobody really knows who he is. And I know he's being advised. And, if on a kind day, I'm like, okay, he's playing this sort of weird political bullshit game. But how can he sleep? That speech. Some people were saying to me, oh, no, it's not. The wording is different. They're so desperate to still be like, no, I can't go through
He
this
said
again. And bloody
strangers.
had Tories. Huh?
He said strangers.
I know
Strangers in your
exactly.
own.
And he's an intelligent man. And also, this is the hot potato. So, you're the bloody Prime Minister. Every word that you say is going to be raked over. So, that speech better be perfect. So, they knew what they were doing. They know the dog whistles. And I just find that completely unacceptable.
I slightly looked at this as it reminded me of Otto von Bismarck, but in a really insane way. So Bismarck, when he came into power, he's known as the Iron Chancellor, probably one of Germany's greatest chancellors. He had a problem with socialism. That's what his view was. He was like, I've got a problem with socialists. How do I get rid of it? And he co-opted their policies. So they were one of the first countries in the world to bring in health insurance, the pension, and workers' insurance, which is what all the socialist parties have been doing. And then that just completely took the wind out of them because they were like, well, he's nicked all of our policies, implemented them, and they're popular. And I sort of looked at what Starmer did, and we probably are going to head in this direction because you brought him up a few times, and I've done a bit of watching, which is Glassman and McSweeney. You've name dropped McSweeney already. And I watched that and I had a listen to what he said. It was quite funny because he chose different words. He wants nationalism and socialism. Where have we heard that before? What does that turn it
Exactly.
into? But the thing is, Bismarck was like, let's just get some of these popular policies in, sort out the population. Even though I don't like them, they're popular enough to keep me in power, and I can do all these other right wings. And what you've just said there is so fascinating because he's co-opted the rhetoric, but he hasn't done anything to support the population to get them on board to allow that rhetoric to flow through. In fact, he's done the exact opposite. It's almost like they've looked at Bismarck and then misunderstood everything about the principle of what he was doing to help the population to get them on board. And you're going, wow, you are. It again, it just seems to be that all these guys are just fucking stupid.
Well, the other thing that I thought was really vital when Labour got in was that, and it might sound a little simplistic, but I thought that everybody needs to feel better off fast.
Yeah.
Fast, yeah. Right? Because let's just talk about people who aren't engaged with politics are getting on, they watch the news, whatever, but they're not, you know, like we are obsessed with all these different things. Essentially, everybody feels a bit skint. Everybody. You know, I've got friends who, you know, they're on two incomes, they might have a couple of kids, live in a very average house, and they can't afford to go on holiday.
Nope.
And, or they can't, they're like, oh, you know, it's my mom's birthday, but I can only afford, like, and that, and they've got two incomes and they're in the prime of their life. Like, so I'm just saying, everybody, you know, we talk about the poverty and the working classes, the middle classes, and, the, you know, the upper middle classes are pretty bloody squeezed. So in my view, the really dangerous thing that Farage is also saying is about raising the level of income tax threshold, which actually I think should be done because it's been in a fiscal drag for so long. You've obviously got to find the money and leaping it up to 20 grand. Every economist says he would absolutely screw the economy, but that's because he hasn't costed it. But actually you could tax the wealthy and you could therefore do that. And then every bugger would feel a little better off. And personally, I think instantly people would feel more affable and more like, okay, I know it's simplistic, but what's
you've in had Gary Stevenson. You've had Gary Stevenson on your show, and he's been saying this for quite some time.
I don't know if he's been talking about the income tax threshold, but he certainly is all about tax the wealthy. Yes, assets over 10 million quid. And he's talking about everybody else just being eaten up because
there's also a massive tax dodge for NLPs. Lawyers, architects, and it costs billions of pounds. It costs the taxpayer billions of pounds a year, and they're not going anywhere near that. And the inheritance tax, which is only 4% pay it, but rolling it out into SMEs and into farms is only going to raise £500 million by 2030. It's nothing.
Yeah.
They have to pay £500 million a year in subsidies to the Drax greenwashing ripoff, which actually goes to wealthy American landowners to cut down their trees and send wood chips over here to burn supposed, green fuel. So there's lots of things they could have done. They're not telling the truth. Their numbers don't add up, and they're definitely doing mousetrap politics. It is that. It's an extension of what the Tories did.
I mean, picking on disabled people. It's like, are you serious, Labour? You know, really, those are your optics. Pensioners and disabled people. Lovely.
But it's almost like they want to make people angry, Gemma. And it's almost they are doing everything they can to actually help that rage, to really help Farage. And Peter Foster was on James O'Brien this morning talking about the reset. Yeah. And he pointed out, I mean, I was screaming as it came through, for all the flack they're getting for this reset, which won't be able to do much, it won't release the growth that we need, because I said the borders are in such a mess, to even get a FEDRI agreement will take years. It's easier to join the single market and go back into that system of, I told you, filtering through stuff, get rid of Sevington and all of that absolute nightmare. But he's going through this pain of the reset, which is going to trigger them saying all of this rubbish again anyway.
Most
of the people that want Brexit don't understand the detail, and they will believe that he's bringing back freedom of movement, even though he's not. So he might as well have just bloody gone for the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then instantly sort our economy out.
Isn't it interesting that the deficit created by Brexit is the exact same amount they had to raise the tax by?
Yeah.
And it's then not talked about. And he could have turned that into a boogeyman. He could have said...
It never, ever does. Never, ever, ever actually fights him on the things that he could win on. He's just so frustrating. Go for Farage on the NHS. Go for Farage on your uncosted economics. Go for Farage on the fact that we can't send anybody back who's already applied for asylum because of Brexit.
And what he's done to fishing and farming.
What he's done to farming. Yeah.
And it's fishing.
Insane. Why are they so bad at their job?
This is why I'm like, are they?
Continuing with Brexit.
There's Glassman with that, isn't there? Because he's a blue Labour, and he doesn't want. He backed Brexit. There's a clip of him like clinking glasses with Nigel Farage. Go on, Liz, you want to talk?
Oh no, Glassman. He's really a regressive. He's somebody from sort of.
Don't you think we should tell everybody who he is? Because I had no idea.
You need to tell us, Liz.
Did you not? Oh.
I know. Tell our viewers.
Maurice Glassman is a Jewish academic who actually rose to prominence under Ed Miliband, and he was given a peerage by Ed Miliband, and he actually fell out of favour before the referendum because he suddenly came out as very anti-European. And in those days, it was on the front. He says he woke up one Sunday morning and he was all over the newspapers because they'd realised that the guy was anti-European. So he disappeared for a long time. And now, hey presto, he's back. But I realised that he'd been, when GB News was first launched and there were hardly any viewings, he was having nice pints with Nigel Farage back in 2022, talking about, you know, how Brexit is great and Trump's great and that royalty is everything. It really is what I would say, Alf Garnett kind of ideology. And
with a bit of Jim Davison thrown in.
Yeah. and very sexist, very 1950s. It's really regressive and awful. It's horrible and sexist. And that's what I saw from Starmer yesterday in that reply to Liz Saville Roberts. That sort of misogyny, the way that he treated her was absolutely horrendous, totally disrespectful. I think it's what happens when they're in power, their group gets smaller and smaller, and it happens with Tony Blair, didn't it? You know, if you read Richard Harris's novel, it's exactly what happens, and they become really isolated and detached from reality. And it's happened very, very quickly with Starmer, but perhaps that's how he's controlled the Labour Party since he took over.
Just going back to what you said, just there was a little point that you made about them being a little bit obsessed with the king. In that little interview that Glassman had with Nigel Farage, he did drop that he felt we got our sovereignty back because we got our monarchy back because it was suddenly a constitution. And you're like, what? And Farage was nodding along. Going, we've got the king back. The king means we're a democracy. And you're like... And then they even recognised it sounded like
also,
a contradiction.
He also said it was an absolute disaster that the French and the Russians had a revolution. I mean, he went further because they should also still have a king. Oh, man.
And he also what I really picked up on is like, I'm all about the working classes. I'm all about the working classes. And I just thought, well, no, you're not, actually, if you support Trump, you know, because he's just part of the bruliarchy, you know. Who is funding him? The man that's been given a $400 million plane by Qatar that he's just accepted. The idea that these bloody grifters are, you know, men of the people. And as a woman as well, I'm going to say, absolutely screw anybody who supports Trump. He is despicable, misogynist, you know. And the day that he said, grab him by the pussy, like he shouldn't have been allowed anywhere near office, end of, despite the, you know, convicted felon. And I feel like that gets really lost in the narrative. And I feel like this idea that, oh, someone's great at business, which, by the way, Trump isn't. I mean, absolute cop. Like, you know, he wiped $2 trillion off the global stock market in a day. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, really good. It's like Liz Truss. he's amazing. And he managed to bankrupt a casino. Oh, yeah, great. Whoa, go here.
It's paternalism, Gemma. It's paternalism.
It's absolutely pathetic. But also you have to have, and, you know, I feel a bit conned by Starmer. I used to watch him, you know, speaking with Corbyn and a human rights lawyer and all of that. I personally want our leaders to have a moral code of some description, some bloody description, and a sense of duty. Okay, so for example, as much as I absolutely thought she was a massive wrong'un, at least you could say about Theresa May, I think she was doing it with this sort of sense of duty, right? She was standing up there doing the best with opinions I don't agree with, horrible Home Office, blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying there is a distinction that I respect. You know, Johnson was self-serving. Sunak, I can't work it out. I don't know whether he's the most corrupt of all or whether he actually had a bit of Theresa May about him. I don't know. Liz Truss, obviously, just nuts. God. But, you know, I just really feel like you know, look at who's running the world: Netanyahu, Putin, like Xi Jinping, like Trump. And it's ghastly.
Yeah,
absolutely ghastly.
It's funny as well, because I didn't realize that Glassman was Jewish, but I wonder how he reacted to Trump's little plan that he was having in Qatar. Do you hear about the American that was finally released, the Jewish American who was guarding the Israeli border in October and got captured?
No,
did you hear about this? Right. So Trump decided and tried to convince the Jewish officer to come to Qatar and then meet him there and then sort of show him off around Qatar. And the Jewish community in America went ballistic because they were like, Qatar's financing Hamas and you want a Jewish American officer to walk around and parade with you as if Qatar have done the good thing. And he's got so much backlash, he's actually cancelled it. Trump pushed back and then they came up with some excuse that he was too unwell, which is probably also true. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, having been down like tunnels for 19 months and having them collapse on you wouldn't be damaging. But you're just like, and so the most amazing thing happened. Ben Shapiro came out and absolutely slammed Trump and basically said what we've all been recognizing and been saying from the progressive side, the left side, which is Trump's all about money. It's all about transactions. That's it.
Yeah.
He has no morals. He has no
skills. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't seem to get that. And they think that he's America first. It's like, no, he's money first.
He's himself first.
He's himself first.
He's selling crypto, like via his Truth Social.
His wealth has gone up exponentially. I can't remember the figures, but it's phenomenal. It's
2 billion, I think. I think 2 billion. And like, yeah, he basically shorted the stock market, right? He literally said to people, good time to buy.
Yeah, hint.
I mean, it's transparent. And then there was that thing in the Oval Office where he had some cronies around. He's like, yeah, you made loads of money. Mm. And people are sitting there thinking, yeah, he's going to sort out the price of eggs.
So,
oh, yeah. Or he's going to deport all the immigrants. Yeah, I know. You couldn't make it out.
The crypto thing that you brought up was very interesting as well, because there was another news story with that, where essentially, and again, Ben Shapiro brought this to my attention and then sort of he gave himself a caveat, but it's clearly part of the Trump plan outline, like methodology. So apparently the crypto coin that he announced just before he got elected, is now worth about 13 billion and they've shorted it. Except now he said, I think it's 200 or 250 people, whoever has the most shares in my crypto gets a meeting with me. And then on top of that, that cryptocurrency is being traded on non-American trading sites. So if you're American, you can't get access to it. You couldn't make it up. Now,
yeah,
Shapiro said, and I haven't vetted this, but it was coming from Shapiro. So you're like, wow, this is so interesting.
Mm.
He suggested that the Qataris are buying influence by buying the coins, which is them personally financing Trump and then allowing them access. And that's apparently another reason why a lot of the Jewish community that were MAGA are now going ballistic about Trump and his behavior. Isn't that wild? But we've been shouting it from the rooftops. No one listens.
No.
And then we can.
No. So therefore, I have a little bit of me that is a bit tired out anyway. I mean, you know, highs and lows, energy goes up and down, right? Keep plodding along, but we're so far away from a general election. And actually at the moment, it doesn't look like there's much dissent in the Labour ranks, because I think Starmer knew what he was doing. He purged anybody who was a like real sort of socialist Corbynite out the party. But
I think he's facing a reckoning, I think, over the...
Maybe. I'm sure they're probably a little unsettled at the moment. But at the moment, you know, like you used to, when the Tories were in, it was every 5 minutes they were doing the 1964 committee and striding down corridors with that big man that looked like a big piece of beef. But so you're not getting much indication of that. And there's a little part of me, and this sounds so like, I mean, I'm not going to sort of give up, but maybe we just, need to get Farage in. And then everyone will see what they bloody voted for. Like,
oh,
what
is that mean?
Liz, I'm just saying, there's a bit of me that is like, is this just cyclical? Is this just what happens in history? And we always mirror everything that goes on in the States. And there's so much Trump regret there now. And a sort of not civil war, but, you know, you see all the protests that we only get so much footage of on social media. And maybe we just are headed there and people need to find out. And then there's a reset. No? Okay.
No, because I think it's very when you really understand what happens with an autocrat and the way that Reform Party is set up, that it just takes on a momentum of its own, and it's relentless, and there's no way they can stop what would start. So absolutely, every single good person must stand up and fight this. And yes, thank goodness we are 4 years away from an election. However, if the Labour Party splits, which could happen, it did happen in 1931 under Ramsay MacDonald, then we are in uncharted waters then. So we really
Well,
have
and
got a
also,
lot of work to do. And there's the anti-Trump coalition is building with Zoe Gardner. Please join it. We're going to be part of it. Farming is going to be a central part of it. It's really
the anti-what
important.
coalition? Anti-what?
Anti-Trump.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, we're all anti-Trump. I mean,
We that
listen, I
that's
think.
what we that's the vehicle we need to get into, because we've got the threat of an American trade deal, which is they're trying to let you believe that it's been signed. It hasn't. It's a pro forma.
Well, also hasn't gone through Congress. No.
No, we don't.
Hasn't
No,
gone through
it's
Congress
not.
yet.
It's not a trade deal. It's just a
No.
sort of a preamble.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make out that they'll only send the good stuff. That's a lie. America doesn't check any of its exports. There is nothing. There's no checks. They turn around and say, "You want to have our imports? It's up to you to check what we send." And
More
I've just
checks,
already
yeah.
told you what our checks
Wow.
are like. So
Yeah.
there is no way. There is no way that we're going to be having the good stuff. And there's no way they're going to manage the quotas either. So the American trade deal is a disaster. So there's that to fight, Trump to fight. And in actually talking about Trump, it definitely puts Nigel Farage in a very, very
That's
difficult
the other
spot.
thing. That is the other thing because of Starmer's choice to, and I understand a little bit, and I know don't go off, Liz, because I know you're like the car industry is so small compared to farming. But like I know he's done nothing for farmers, but like there that is another, there is still people with families and everything, and so you didn't want those tariffs, so that was a positive out of that. But the schmoozing to Trump is pretty unpalatable, and as a result, he can't now come after Farage for having supported him.
I Yeah, but I've got to come back to you on that, because the car industry is owned by Indian corporation. I know the jobs are important, but the farming and food sector employs 4 million jobs. And
I
it's
know.
all about SMEs. So actually, the war that is being waged, it's not about individual people. It is actually about corporations owning everything. And so I believe that Starmer and Reeves are helping that reality with the budget, with the inheritance tax on SMEs, which I know it's all about farming, but it actually has really stressed family businesses, which have been the backbone of this country and our identity. And then with the national insurance changes, and then the India
I
trade
know.
deal means that Indian corporations can come in here, buy up distressed British companies, which are family businesses, on the cheap, and then ship in. And I'm not, as you know, I'm pro-immigration. What I don't like is unfairness, because they're going to be able to bring Indian personnel in here 20% cheaper. Anyway, we've got that because of Brexit, but then they also don't have to pay the national insurance,
But the
which
visa
is my one of
system.
my farmers. His salary bill has gone up by 4.3 million a year because of that national insurance change,
I'm
and you're looking at
pretty. It's
marginal
crazy.
profits.
I'm
Yeah,
pretty
and
sure
yet.
the visa scheme said only 100 visas
No,
extra.
it's not the visa scheme, is it? It is that they can bring in their staff to set up the
But only
company, and it's a
100 in
3 year
total.
rolling, that it's not limited to 100.
It's not.
There is no limit.
Because when I did the research, it came back and said, my understanding was there was 100 extra visas added. I'm happy to go back and check that.
Yeah, well, I mean, 100 is still a lot, Al.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, but then it's the idea is that it's meant to be reciprocal, and then you've got 17 other countries with these type of trade deals with the UK, where
So
if you, I
why
mean, I don't get
which
it,
yeah, I
but
mean
I don't
it's
get it,
not.
but if you go over to the country, you just pay their national insurance, and then that's the end of it. I'm not 100% sure why there's that exchange between countries, but
The issue that we're looking at is the survival of British businesses stressed by Brexit, and the fact that they're going to bring in corporations are going to be able to come in and buy, huge swathes of British businesses and take away that family ownership. That is what the
I
change
don't like that.
means.
I actually don't.
And we've seen that with Amazon, yeah? It's the same Amazon effect.
Yeah.
And Amazon pays no tax, which is why our public services are crumbling.
And water.
So I think my problem at the moment is I don't really know what to say to people. So leading up to the election, it was very easy. Get the Tories out at all costs. You know, the damage that they were doing in every way. So I was part of the vote tactically team, you know. So I voted Lib Dem, you know, Marina voted Green, but we just wanted to get them out. And in doing so, we were ergo supporting Labour, right? So by voting tactically, really, that's what. So then you had the contingency, people like Owen Jones who were saying, do not vote Labour. Keir Starmer is an absolute shyster. You need to vote Green or Lib Dem and absolutely make sure, which we ended up doing by default anyway, make sure that Labour, that the shot across the bows isn't reform, that it's other progressives saying, we want you to be progressive. And, you know, with hindsight, he was right. And I hoped, I didn't think Labour were going to be perfect. I wasn't that naive, but I thought I didn't think they would be like this. So where I'm at now is a load of people going, told you, which is quite boring for anybody. And me going, yeah. And I don't really know, because at the moment, it doesn't seem the right time. When it becomes the time, where do you go then? What are you saying? Because I'm even feeling now like I probably, if Zach Belensky gets in, Ed Davies talking sense. But there isn't a clear deterrent from Farage, because then the next thing becomes, Jesus, you just don't want to, you know, let Farage in. And at the moment, I don't know what the alternative is.
It's interesting that you say that, because so all I ever said in the build up to the election is I looked at the manifesto of Labour and said they can get in, it's better than the Tories, but it wasn't going to fix anything. And it hasn't, and I'm still sticking by that. Unless they bring out some new policies, nothing's going to be fixed. So the question is then, can a party step into the breach and offer those solutions that I hope someone will pick up on? It's a bit difficult at the moment, because you wonder, obviously, you've got a party leadership. You just mentioned the Green Party and Zach. So obviously that could bring in a brand new manifesto. Maybe they'll take on some of the ideas.
I like him, actually. Yeah, I like him.
It's been interesting. So I think Supertan, Graham Hughes, and Jimmy the Giant have all gone and given either, you know, a small thumbs up, or they've said he sounds like Corbyn. And that's sort of, you're looking for that Corbyn, Bernie Sanders.
We need a lefty populist. Yeah, we need someone who can cut through and bloody speak to people in a way that doesn't put off business as well, because you have to be realistic about who wins elections.
Oh,
right.
And to get the sponsorship. Because that's the aim of the game. Like, you've got to get, to a certain extent, I mean, we've talked about this almost in every single episode. The comms from Labour, from the Greens, from the Lib Dems is horrific, considering what they could be doing. Like, I cannot emphasise this enough. The Trawl, Max Rotespierre, a different bias, they get bigger numbers than even Reform. Why are they not connecting with them? Why are they not working with them? It boggles my mind. I don't understand.
I don't. Why aren't they wheeling Gary Stevenson in? Why aren't they wheeling like us in and think to like, yeah, because yeah, we have got really amazing audiences. And I think we are more relatable, whether you agree with us or not. Like, we've got better way of articulating stuff than
bloody. Yeah, well, I mean, Nigel Farage has got a whole TV station, you know.
And TikTok. He's massive on TikTok. Yeah. Like,
none of the other parties are even going anywhere near that. The Lib Dems have got Nick Clegg's former advisor, Polly McKenzie, doing a podcast on the Times Radio. And that's about it. And yeah, Labour's...
Also, I really think Ed Davies is great. And I think he's very sensible in Parliament at the moment, a sort of very good moderate voice. Also, in the lead up to the election, and I know I argued with Marina about this because I know it sort of worked. I hated him doing all that water slide bollocks and, you know, divvying about. And actually what I liked was when he was speaking about his personal circumstances, when he was speaking about, I just thought, this is where we've been reduced to in a country that a political leader has to go down and divvy about on a boat or a raft to get a headline.
Dems need a new leader, fresh blood. Ed Davies, very tainted by coalition, the post office, which is why he's doing the That's why he's doing the stunt, to avoid scrutiny. He's also the person that's responsible for that Drax decision, the greenwashing decision, which is, I'm really angry about that, because really I think we should be subsidising food, not American landowners who are very, very wealthy.
So, he said, I can't speak about the post office because I'm in my swimming trunks. Yeah.
Yes. and he got a job with the lawyers who defended the post office as well. So, Ed Davey really needs to go.
Get out.
Have got some good people in there, some good new MPs who would be good. But they've really had difficulties. They've been really moribund by a lot of this awful trans war, which is horrible, which we spoke about the last time I was on the show with Otto. And it's been a huge distraction. You know, there's so many important things. And I just said to people all of the time, everyone's rights are underpinned as long as we stay in Europe and we stay certainly in the ECHR. That is how you have to look at things as a whole, not at something which is a divisive, moribinding issue. But they've had loads of legal cases, as the Green Party have as well, which has meant that they've lost money and headway because they've been distracted by that
And this comes back to my point, I'm afraid, Liz. This is probably why, as things stand right now, Farage will win, because the Conservatives are dead. They're out. They're out of path. They're pathetic. They're not the opposition. Reform are at the moment. Let's be real. And then over on our side, we're fanning around with not really knowing whether we're Lib Dem, Green or Labour, and all a bit despondent. Yeah.
I'm of the view that we need the Conservatives to come back to the centre. They are a traditional, recognised party. And there are a number of people. And where I live in a rural seat, I get that there's people that will only ever vote Conservative. And the ones that are disgusted by what's going on are not voting. And so, I mean, that's the biggest danger to us with Farage. And it's what happened with Hitler. People didn't vote. It's not that people voted for him. And so we need a good leader, David Gawke, you know, any of them, to bring them back to the centre. Even James Cleverly, I've spoken to him myself because he came on our panel. We're not looking for us. I'm looking at, and I suppose I was always aware of this. Like when the referendum happened, my sister's an artist and was in London then, in Kentish Town, in Keir Starmer's constituency. Hey, there's no way Brexit's going to win. And I was like, you know what? I'm really feeling uncomfortable about this because I'm out here and it's very, very different out here to what it is like in London. And so that is the person I'm talking about. We need those votes to come out and just eat away at that reform vote. That is how we get, we avoid disaster. So I would say to everybody, please go and join the Conservatives, because there will be a leadership election. Kemi Badenoch is fighting for her life, which is why
never thought I'd hear you say that, Liz.
I never thought I'd hear you say that. You've just terminated our show.
Go out, join the Conservatives. It's a transactional thing. And make sure that you've got the power to stop Robert Jenrick. Because if Jenrick gets in, we are fucked.
But he's Conservative. And he is. I mean, the stuff he was saying was like BNP-esque.
Well, no. We need to have the opportunity to stop
he might.
Jenrick.
Jenrick could do a coalition, right, with Farage.
Yeah.
That's why we need to stop Jenrick. We need a moderate, Cleverly.
Can I offer a glimmer of hope in the fact that, please, please,
please.
I'm going to put my history cap on. The thing that gets me is that the Reform Party are a party of hate. There's no arguing about that. They hate disabled, they hate the NHS, they hate foreigners, they hate immigrants, they hate
trans.
I mean, the list goes on. It wouldn't surprise me if they have a dislike of women as well. I mean, there's hardly any women at their rallies. There's a reason.
They've got Jane Andrew Jenkins.
It's being appealed. She's being appealed.
I would say there's, with parties of hate, especially if they still want to operate in the democratic system, and especially with Farage's track record in the past, his parties haven't really lasted. They sort of fall apart at the wayside. So UKIP, Brexit, obviously Brexit had a time span limit on it. But I don't, and we've already seen it, Lowe left. He had a councillor say the Reform Party is a cult and that people were lending the vote and they expelled her immediately. So you're going...
They've had 11 councillors who've already dropped out, who got voted in, and they're like, oh, actually, I didn't really know what the job was. I don't want to do it. Can I give it up? And each one of those by-elections will cost the taxpayer £10,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Because they didn't realise how much work was involved.
I think they were sort of like strong-armed into doing it.
The thing you've got to understand is that a lot of people vote in elections. And this is kind of like they vote. And it is what Jo Swinson tried to get in on. People vote for who they imagine is going to be in number 10 Downing Street. And at the moment, and there was a focus group at Channel 4 did it a few months ago, and they're all moaning about everything that was going on. And then they sort of said, who can you imagine is going to be the next person in number 10? And they all, nearly all of them, I think it was 9 out of 10 of them, all came up with a picture of Farage. And that is the answer that people vote on. It's kind of like, they don't listen to any of the other noise. They just think, which person deserves to be in number 10? Even though, as we know, as tactical voters, you're voting for your MP. You're not voting for who goes into number 10. But that overarching sort of swell of who do you think should be prime minister is what pushes elections over the line.
Channel 4 went Farage, bloody hell.
Filming a focus group, but I think it was Luke Trill leading it. It was really good. I'll tell you, Max Robespierre, I think, has highlighted it on his channel. And it was in Grimsby or somewhere like that. But it showed all of them moaning about everything. Brexit, you know, they weren't happy with anything. And they weren't even particularly happy with Farage. But they just turned around and said, we're looking at what's on the table here. And he's the only guy that I can see in number 10. And that is really our challenge.
Yeah.
Which is why the Conservatives need a statesman type leader. This is happening because Badenoch, they can't see her in number 10.
No.
And so they need a statesman type leader. And the only person that I can see that's possible, that, you know, I don't know if there's anyone else that's going to come to light, but I think James Cleverly would be a better post holder. So I'm not saying he's going to be prime minister. I think he's a better person to try and get that right wing vote split between the Tories and Reform.
They loved a bit of Penny Mordaunt, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Stand up and fight.
So does that mean you don't think it will implode? And bear in mind, I've already made one on the Reform Party side. I already made one prediction, which seems to be coming true. In January, I said Trump will lose the Congress. And Ben Shapiro came out and confirmed, said the exact same thing. He said, you're on the verge of losing Congress, and now you're backing this idea of sending an Israeli to Qatar. You're going to completely collapse your vote. And that's the end of that. That's my prediction. I'm sticking with it. I'm predicting the same thing's going to happen with Farage now. I think he'll implode. I don't believe he can control his councillors. I don't think he's got the work ethic. I don't think he's got the structure in place. And he keeps saying really horrible stuff. And I think even what we were saying earlier about him doing this sort of Bismarckian thing, Farage and the Conservatives, their response was to go even further to the right and start saying even... That's when Jenrick came out and started saying British nationalist stuff. So I'm going, is that what they've done in some ways? They've sort of pushed it to the right, damaged themselves, but they've made Farage and the others go even further to the right, which makes them sound like complete insane extremists. Do you think it will implode, or do you think I'm being overly optimistic, Gemma?
I think they've got very, very wealthy backers behind them now. Well, you know, people like Nick Candy. And I think it's got serious. And so, sadly, no, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think there's too many very wealthy people now who've put their money behind him who aren't going to let that happen.
Do you think that would stop them making all the obviously they're just going to make, they're going to put their foot in their mouth. I mean, Richard Tice, that legal thing that he did with the council.
If putting their foot in their mouth was going to make them implode, that would have happened by now.
I guess the thing that makes me, there's a mixture, because obviously you pointed out earlier, hopefully give it a chance, put them in there and they'll show how bad it is. Well, Brexit's done that and nothing changed. So there's that element. But I'm still just thinking they're going to say stuff that's just going to put off voters more and more. And now with the councils, like, he's made a huge error with the council saying I'm going to stop these solar farms and batteries and pylons.
But you're making the quintessential mistake of thinking that those voters think like you. As I said, they don't think like that. They don't see the detail. They just sort of think, oh, I like Nigel, yay, he agrees with me, and we've got too many immigrants. And he's really British, and I like feeling this feeling that we're better than everybody else.
And you can have a pint with him. Yeah, and also they're fed up with like men in suits
Yeah.
promising the earth, don't deliver,
Anything.
it's shit. And I think they genuinely think he's on our side. It's
His
what it's how Trump got in. We can't
yeah.
see it,
His
but
biggest
millions of
weakness is
people.
Trump. There's no doubt about that. But he's so clever at getting away with. I mean, it's incredible what he gets away. He's much cleverer than Boris Johnson at, to someone going, oh, yep, not my fault. No. I mean, it is absolutely incredible.
He played a blinder yesterday, coming out and saying Starmer had gone too far, and his ass is going to split the left for years. I mean, he's an opportunist and he takes every single one of them.
Which is why, yes, Starmer has to go, Ed Davey needs to go, and the Conservatives we need to stop Jenrick, which is why please go and join the I know it's painful, but go and join the Conservatives so at least you got a vote. And that would be quite satisfying, I think, to vote against Robert Jenrick, because it has to happen.
I will try and then bring up the mood once again after that extraordinary fail and go, what do you think about Zach Polanski? Gemma, you said you're liking the sound of him, I think you said.
I need to sort of like watch more, but so far, yeah, I'm liking his energy. I think he seems to be, quite decent. Yeah,
Liz?
decent candidate.
I really like Ellie Clowes, and I think she's really good. She's really on the detail. She's a great speaker and she's got depth. The thing, I don't know much about Zach, but I have seen something which made me feel very uncomfortable, that he was hypnotizing women to make them believe that they would have bigger breasts. I feel very uncomfortable about that as a woman.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, joy.
Christ, yeah, brilliant.
That really, really freaked me out, actually. I was just like, oh no, I don't like that at all. So I would, yeah. Ellie really is, I think she's in the wrong party. I think she's better off in the Lib Dems, because the other thing that concerns me about the Greens is that their economic policy is quite a basket case. And also because the environmental movement has had been so damaging to our food security, it just doesn't add up to me, that some of the policies on the green side, because as I keep saying to them, if we don't have enough food and people start rioting, that is not good for the environment, as happened in Sri Lanka. So for me, I always come from a basic level of, from the ground and upwards growing food, and thinking about that from a basic premise. And also, if we really wanted to do something about climate change, going back in the day, we should have been promoting how we farm, because actually British farming has been the most sustainable farming method in the world. And that's changing, as we've got more factory farms now, thanks to Brexit, 20% more.
Well, on that cheerful note, thank you so much to our guests. Thank you to our co-hosts. Links in description to both of them. Please go and check out the trawl. Thank you so much. And if you've got this far in the video, we must have done something right. So please hit that like and subscribe button. Once again, thank you. Bye.
Tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Gemma, you've been, as it's summer holidays and everything else, I thought I'd come up with something a little bit different. You've been stranded on a desert island.
Good.
Hello, thank you. Hallelujah.
Freedom, free at last.
There's no internet connection.
Okay, this is going to be interesting as you what you choose next. So basically, you've got a choice of being rescued by either Nigel Farage or Piers Morgan on one of their boats. However, you have to spend 6 months on the boat with that person before you get home.
Oh,
Who do you pick?
Piers Morgan.
Oh, wow, that was quick. Outcome. What? Elaborate, please.
Because Nigel Farage, I'd be just like, I just couldn't. Piers Morgan, I'd say sometimes sort of 70, 80% of what he does, I'm like, oh, and yet there have been moments where I've cheered him. Like when he was on GMB during COVID, there were times when he roasted some Tory MPs and it was like incredibly satisfying. So he is a broadcaster with a huge ego who I think he's all about showbiz, right? So So when he had the incredible Palestinian voice on his channel, the ratings soared. And so he got him on more. Literally, that's it for him. It's ratings, right? So I think that's quite transparent. Yeah. He's not running for political office. Mm-mm. Some of his views, I think when he goes on and on about Meghan, it's really weird. It's really odd. Chill out. But I would be more interested to talk to him about the people he's met, about the stuff that he's done, to challenge him, to just talk about media, talk about presenting, talk about broadcasting. I know some people who I don't want to name drop, but some celebs who I know him, and they're like, oh, he's all right, you know, they have dinner with him and stuff. So I think he's sort of a showman because of his power and his reach. Yes, that can be pernicious, but Nigel Farage, no.
Liz, you're going to go on the best holiday ever. What would that be? Just out of curiosity, what would be your best holiday ever?
Oh, God.
Beach, turquoise sea, sun.
Yeah, I am
a
beach person. I am. I really like diving and scuba diving and snorkeling. Yeah.
So you're going on the best holiday ever. Yeah. However, in the evening, for 1 to 2 hours, you have to die the deal with Jacob Rees-Mogg at your table.
Oh, I've already dealt with him, yeah.
Or you have to listen to Lee Anderson do karaoke with Matt Hancock for 2 hours.
The latter. Jacob Rees-Mogg gave me the worst nightmare of my life when I appeared on GB News with him. I mean, the worst nightmare. I can't even repeat it. It was so bad. It was traumatizing. So definitely the karaoke with 30p Lee and Matt Hancock. I think I got off lightly 6 months in a boat with Nigel Farage or...
Geez, well, I know. I mean, I just thrown myself in the sea.
I honestly thought, Gemma, you were going to be like, can I not have the option of just staying on the island?
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, you're all right. I'll keep talking to my coconut friend. Remember, was that Tom Hanks? He just spent the whole time talking to a coconut. I'd do that.
Oh, dear.